Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
The good news? We survived 2008.
Good morning. Call from Queens here. 2008 is the year that the shoe hit the fan.
Well, the year of the shoe becomes a shoe-in for Barack Obama. Bye-bye backward. We're loving looking forward in 2009. We got our head on straight anyway on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning and happy new year. It's Thursday, January 1st, 2009, and we already have a takeaway of the morning, John.
That's right. We're looking
forward. We've got our heads screwed on straight.
That's right.
That's a good way to start 2009. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Adora.
Today, the new U.S.-Iraq security pact goes into effect, the latest in Gaza, and we're going to talk about black-eyed peas. Perhaps if you eat some today, that could bring you good luck. We'll explain those stories coming up. First, these headlines.
Fighting in Gaza has continued into a sixth day. Israel bombed government buildings while at the same time agreeing to step up humanitarian aid to Gaza. Hamas militants fired at least three rockets into Israel. Arab countries called an emergency session of the UN Security Council last night to draft a ceasefire agreement. Western delegates say it'll need more work to be more balanced. United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon continues to call for an end to the violence.
The future of the peace process, stability in the region, and goodwill among people throughout the world, all are trapped.
The United Nations says nearly 400 Palestinians have been killed in the attacks. Four Israelis have died since Saturday.
It's a new day in Iraq. Iraq is on the road to gaining its independence. U.S. forces officially handed over control of the Green Zone in Baghdad today. It's part of a new security deal that will have all U.S. troops out by the end of 2011. In Bangkok, it looks like the nightclub fire that killed nearly 60 people was caused by fireworks on stage. This partygoer, who gave his name as Lucky, says there was only one small gate for the New Year's revelers to pass through.
I saw the fire where the people were singing the song. So I just did not think anything. I just came out. And there's only one way to come out, you know.
More than 200 people were injured in the resulting stampede.
The Russian energy monopoly Gazprom has cut all natural gas supplies to Ukraine this morning. That's after the Ukraine failed to reach an agreement with Russia over late payments. In downtown Aspen, Colorado, there was an evacuation last night because of suspicious packages and threatening notes left at two Aspen banks. Canceled all New Year's activities in the city. Authorities say a suspect was caught leaving them on surveillance cameras. An investigation continues. The Dow gained a little more than 1% in 2008's final session to close at 8776, the worst year for the market since 1931. And at the closing bell, Merrill Lynch employees cheered a farewell to the 95-year-old brokerage firm. As of midnight, Merrill Lynch is now officially part of Bank of America. There's a footnote for you.
Yeah, no doubt. There's going to be a lot of those farewells as we move into 2009.
A lot of people needing good luck in 2009. Now, eating black-eyed peas is a for sure good luck charm for New Year's Day. But what good luck New Year's traditions do you have? 877-8-MY-TAKE. Share them with us. Or mytake@thetakeaway.org. Lentils are a favorite around the
Lentils,
world.
Or you can exercise, or you can do a little meditating, or take a long walk. How are you going to start off this New Year on a good note? 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org.
Shooting small pets is not recommended.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
It's The Takeaway on WNYC at 4 minutes past six. Good morning. I'm Brian Zumhagen in for Richard Hake. Hundreds of thousands of revelers braved the cold temperatures last night to bring in the new year in Times Square. Lynbrook, Long Island resident Tony Icabellis grew up in Flatbush, Brooklyn, and came back to the big town for the festivities. She called it an honor to have Senator Hillary Clinton and her husband, former President Bill Clinton, lower the famous Waterford crystal ball for the countdown to midnight.
They should be here. This is part of their city. They belong here, and just like us, we're all New Yorkers.
As soon as the crowds moved out of Times Square, the city's Department of Sanitation dispatched more than 100 workers who used mechanical sweepers, trucks, and leaf blowers to remove tons of trash from the area.
Governor Patterson has granted clemency to two inmates, but criminal justice advocates are disappointed, saying he's failed to overhaul what they call unfair drug policies. The governor commuted the sentences of one inmate serving 20 years on a drug conviction and another who was serving 15 years for first-degree robbery. Randy Credico is with the William Kunstler Moses Foundation, which advocates for repealing the state's Rockefeller drug laws. He says Patterson should have granted more clemencies, particularly for nonviolent drug offenders.
He had an opportunity to set the stage to change the direction of the criminal justice system in the state of New York, and he didn't do it.
A Patterson spokesman says 450 inmates applied for clemency, but most did not meet the criteria to be granted a commutation, and of those, few were drug offenders. Millions of Time Warner cable customers won't lose their access to MTV and 18 other channels after the cable giant reached an agreement early today with media conglomerate Viacom. The two sides, citing disagreements over fee hikes, had threatened to black out at a minute past midnight.
The Takeaway is supported by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at knightfoundation.org. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation to enhance public understanding of science and technology in the modern world.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everyone. And as my first official act as a news host this morning, I'm going to shamelessly rip off Neil Armstrong, the astronaut. It's one small step for Iraq on the road to independence,
but
it's a giant leap for U.S. policy. What's going on in Baghdad today? As part of the new security agreement, the status of forces agreements between the United States and the Iraqi government, Baghdad actually is taking control of the green zone, that roughly 6 square miles of safety, so-called sanctuary in Baghdad.
Iraq is taking control.
Right. The Iraqi government in Baghdad is taking control of the green zone. The Iraqis get to decide which buildings, what parts should be opened up to the rest of the city, who can go in and out, their charge of security. They're even beginning to take rent from the Americans. And for a look at what the implications for this pact are for U.S. policy and where it's going to be tested in the days ahead, we're joined by Campbell Robertson. He's the Iraq War correspondent for the New York, one of the Iraq War correspondents for the New York Times. He joins us from Baghdad on a very heavily delayed line. Campbell Robertson, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too.
When is the first test of the status of forces agreements on this scale, the green zone being handed over this morning?
Well, I mean, I think your Neil Armstrong analogy was apt. Everybody's been saying, I was at a ceremony today over there, and baby steps is what everybody's been saying. I don't know that we'll see anything major in the, you know, maybe in the next 1, 2, or 3 months. I mean, the Iraqis are taking over the checkpoint slowly. They've already moved into the Republican Palace, which the embassy moved out of. But in terms of major changes, that's gonna come down the line, I think.
How can you gauge the sense of Iraqi civilians in being comfortable with Iraqis manning these checkpoints as opposed to American soldiers? There's a whole sectarian complication there, and I'm wondering how long it's going to take for people in Baghdad particularly and Iraq generally to become comfortable with seeing Iraqis in control here.
Well, I mean, there's a really long history here of sort of nasty elements making their way into the security forces. And I mean, the Army looks pretty good. You talk to Americans, and they, particularly Army, the police still getting there. But the Army, you know, is proficient. But what they worry about is, you know, the Americans are very strict. They don't have friends and relatives, and they're worried that, you know, Uncle Ahmed comes through, and they kind of just let him go through, and it would just be a looser security situation. And that, particularly the ones who work in the green zone, who feel they're already jeopardized a little bit because of their association with Americans, they're terrified about it. I mean, they feel like it's going to be a much looser security situation.
Are there any steps that the Iraqis are taking to counteract this perception, as you've sort of sketched out there, that it's sort of it's not what you know, it's who you know in security, and if you have an arrangement, a side deal with the person at the checkpoint, you can get past no matter what you're carrying. Is there any way they can affirmatively establish that those rules maybe don't apply anymore?
Well, I mean, they've got, you know, one of the units that's in charge of the security is this, they're called the Baghdad Brigade, and they're a pretty elite unit that reports directly to the Prime Minister. So these guys mean business, and all these scanning machines and these sort of toys that the Americans have had access to at the checkpoints. You know, there's a whole training course, the Iraqis. So, you know, I mean, there's really no way to prove you can do it than by doing it, I suppose.
And Campbell, this is certainly a test, because the next big milestone would be that U.S. troops are supposed to be out of Iraqi cities by the end of June. So if this goes well, then it's more likely that next milestone will be hit, right?
Well, I would think so. I mean, first of all, the troops, that's technically combat troops, and a lot of this is definitional. I mean, you know, there's a lot on the sofa saying this, that, and the other, and, well, how do you define this? How do you define that? So there will be troops in the cities, but there won't be quote-unquote combat troops.
Well,
you know, there'll be advisors, whatever that means.
It sounds like there's a degree of uncertainty there. Can we answer the question, is it a happy new year in Baghdad this morning, Campbell, before we go?
It's cold, but I think it's happy. I'm sitting right now looking across the river at the green zone, and there's a park in front of me, and people seem to be out playing soccer and hanging out. So, so far, hope it stays that way.
All right, well, we'll talk to you if it changes, that's for sure. Campbell Robertson, Iraq war correspondent for The New York Times. Thanks so much, Campbell.
Thanks, and happy new year.
Campbell Robertson, of course, in Baghdad. Darn.
The new year in Gaza, though, is taking up where the old one left off in a blizzard of Israeli bombs and Hamas-launched rockets into Israel. Israeli jets bombed the Palestinian parliament building and Navy ships opened fire at Hamas positions along the coastline. Hamas has been firing rockets. At least three hit Israel. Meanwhile, the UN Security Council held an emergency session late yesterday. Mike Sargent is covering the story for our partner, the BBC, and he joins us from Jerusalem. Good morning and Happy New Year, Mike.
And Happy New Year to you.
Can you describe the conditions on the ground in Gaza?
Very difficult. They've been getting worse by the day. Humanitarian supplies are starting to get through now. Food distribution is continuing today. It's been suspended for the last couple of weeks. So that's a positive sign. Some medicines are getting through to hospitals. But it's very hard for aid workers to do their job under the constant threat of Israeli airstrikes. So it's very tough in Gaza indeed, and although Israel says its enemy is Hamas and not the people of Gaza, it's quite hard for those who live there to feel like they're not all under attack.
And Mike, I understand the weather has been really bad, rain and clouds. Who has that been helping, Hamas or Israel?
It's hard to say. I mean, Israel has superior technology, so that may help in one sense, but certainly the weather, although it may have delayed a ground operation, Israeli tanks going into Gaza, that's one thing it might have done, but it certainly hasn't reduced the overall level of violence in and around the Gaza Strip. We saw with the appalling weather conditions yesterday, a lot of rockets being fired by Hamas out of Gaza, 77 rockets in total striking Israel, and the Israeli airstrikes continuing their relentless bombardment of the Gaza Strip. Conditions are improving today. I'm looking out of the window at blue sky at the moment, so that may change things a little bit.
The threat of a ground operation is still very real. Today, an Israeli newspaper is reporting that an Israeli army has recommended that the government go in briefly, or at least launch a major ground operation, a brief one. What do you make of that?
Yes, I mean, there's been speculation for the last few days that a ground operation is about to be launched. The tanks have been massing on the border with Gaza. More troops arrived yesterday, and the indications from the military are that they are ready to go in if the order comes. But it's a difficult decision for Israel's leaders to make. They've sent troops into Gaza before. They've taken a lot of Israeli casualties in Gaza before, but they haven't stopped the rocket fire. So if they go in, they'll have to have a clear plan of what they're going to do, what they're going to achieve that can't be achieved by airstrikes alone, and how they're going to get the soldiers out when they think they've achieved it. So there are a lot of dilemmas there, and that's what may be delaying any kind of ground operation.
An Israeli army spokeswoman is quoted as saying that Hamas has absorbed a heavy strike, but it isn't enough. In this sixth day, is there a greater sense of what enough will be?
Well, I think from Israel's point of view, enough is when Hamas no longer has the ability to fire rockets at Israel. So that point hasn't been reached yet because we still see the rockets coming out of the Gaza Strip.
Now, and Mike, on that point, there was a rocket that entered Beersheba, which is about 30 miles away, and there was no casualty. But I suspect that is very politically inflammatory within Israel.
Oh, hugely, hugely. I mean, the range of these rockets has been increasing, as you say, hitting 30 miles outside the Gaza Strip. By one police calculation, that puts over 800,000 Israelis potentially within range of these rockets. So it is a new development, these longer range rockets. And that's why it's all become so politically charged in Israel. The Israeli people want their government to put a stop to this. And that's why there is so much support at the moment for continued military action, despite the fact that internationally you're seeing quite a lot of criticism of Israel and increasing calls for a ceasefire.
And very quickly, Mike, before we go, diplomatically speaking, I mean, do you see any light in the coming days on that front?
That's going to continue. We saw the first round at the United Nations in New York last night, but no ceasefire solution yet. It'll probably take a few more days, and as long as that continues, then so will the Israeli military operation.
Mike Sargent, thank you very much. Mike Sargent is a BBC correspondent, and he's reporting to us from Jerusalem.
Email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.